Hello world, welcome to the PocketGamer.biz podcast with your host me, Brian Baglow, and for our weekend views we're joined by the cream of the crop, the editorial team. With us this week we have Craig Chappell, our head of content, Daniel Griffiths, the editor, and Aaron Assel, rejoining us after a week off, our news editor. Hello chaps, how are you? How's the week been?
All good here, thank you. Nice to be here.
It's been real good. I've been deep in the PGC San Francisco and GDC mire of trying to set up meetings and whatnot. But I'm really excited. It's going well. So obviously, Pocket Gamer Connect San Francisco, March 18th and 19th next week. And then we're actually already preparing as well for, I say already, it's not that long away, Game Expo Summit Dubai, powered by Pocket Gamer Connects, May 1st and 2nd. So busy week. But other than that, I've just been getting deeper and deeper into the Kate Middleton conspiracy hole after the whole Photoshop fiasco. I had no idea it was a thing before that.
I did challenge the team to keep this relevant and timely by working Her Majesty into this, or Her Highness, I should say. So wherever you are, Kate, Godspeed. That's brilliant, Craig. Thank you and well done. Daniel, what's been occupying you this week?
Well, I forgot to say last week, I went to the Brits last week, the week before, which was brilliant, which is really good. I sat sort of 15 feet behind Kylie Minogue, see the back of Kylie Minogue's head. It was great. It was a highlight. I met lots of interesting gamey folk there. It was a beautiful networking event, and I'm a big music fan, so it was good. I don't know whether you guys have seen the Glastonbury lineup, by the way, but
I have not.
Oh yeah, I won't go off topic, but wading through 4 feet of mud to watch Coldplay for the fifth time, not something that I'm lining up for this year. Other than fun stuff, I've been lots of Apple watching. This Apple watching and decoding this week. They're a never ending source of amusement for me. And as our resident fighter for the Apple corner, I find it increasingly bemusing having to stick up for them all the time. I spoke to Mark Whitten of Unity earlier on today, which is great. So expect lots coming up on the site soon, giving away some of their GDC reveals and plans. So that was good. What else? The answer to the question, is Monopoly Go making money, was solved this week. So that was a load off as well. It was nice to write about that. More to come on that very shortly.
Solved again for the 20th time.
Yep.
What can I say, Daniel? That sounds truly epic. And Aaron?
Yeah, so I've been getting out and about playing some Monster Hunter now.
Awesome.
It's the 6 month anniversary at the moment, so they've had some like limited time monsters that in classic mobile gaming fashion, you need to play now or you're gonna miss your chance to get the cool stuff. So, I've been trying to hunt as many monsters as I can while they're around and make some cool weapons and stuff, and then wait for another lull period, but at least have some cool stuff to use in it, I guess.
Nice. And as somebody who's actually playing games as opposed to just, looking at all the politics and background kerfuffle of making the things, congratulations. That's no mean feat.
It's hard to fit in sometimes.
It's great to have you here, folks. It really is, and I really appreciate you coming along. I'm loving the new opportunity to discuss the headlines of the week and go behind the headlines and really sort of drill down into some of the things that are changing the mobile games market around us. So, without further ado, let's plough into those very headlines. Daniel, I believe you've been looking at Monopoly Go, as you said.
Yeah, it's a good one. I love it when a game is popular. I love it when a game is loved by its fans, and I love it when a game can do that and make money at the same time. So what has been rumbling for the last 7 months or so is Monopoly Go is from Scopely is of course a huge success, but people behind the scenes seem hell bent on dragging it down as regards the amount of money that they're spending on UA. So we had their CEO, Javier Ferreira, basically set the record straight and said that they are spending only a quarter of the amount of money that they're making on user acquisition and the growth of the game. So that's all fine. Until you look at it, and the announcement was that they've made $2 billion, which is obviously very good. If you spend a quarter of $2 billion, you know, that's half a billion dollars. It's an insane amount of money to spend on user acquisition in one game. But that's the way the business is heading. It's fantastic. They've done the math. They can stack it up. I wouldn't recommend that anybody else spends that amount of money on user acquisition. But for Monopoly Go, to get $2 billion, you've got to spend $500 million. So yeah, it's a high stakes game out there, the world of Monopoly these days. So that was fascinating. I don't know what other guys think. Were you surprised to see $500 million spent on UA?
I'm surprised to see and amazed to $2 billion in, is it 10 months something? Absolutely insane.
Yeah, 10 months.
Yeah, 10 months.
And the second billion was in 3 months.
Just a mere 3 months to make a billion. So, like, I mean, this is how mobile games have always scaled, in the sense that if you have a good game and you know kind of the returns you're going to get on your ads, on your UA spends, then, you know, you'll invest in the UA to scale it. So they obviously have it down to a T. And I mean, invest $500 million if you've got it to invest, and you know you're going to make all that money back, which, you know, they are. So why not? Stupidly successful game, 7 years in the making, and yeah, congrats to Scopely.
Yeah, I wonder how many other folks are going to follow suit. But yeah, they are sticking their neck out, but they're winning. We'll see what happens. Other stuff I was looking at. Data AI do a monthly roundup. Their Gaming Pulse, which I love getting. It's a good read. You should take a look at it on the site. Short version is One Punch Man World and NBA Infinite are this February's app ranking breakout stars. It's an interesting report in that the metrics that they use and the dive that they do, they're able to assess what the hot new games are and can assess which one are going to go on to future success. And yeah, I love looking at their charts. One Punch Man World was only out in January and is doing fabulously well, which is great. But little things like NBA Ultimate NBA Infinite rather is flying as well. But there's little things like, you know, watch out for Hero Clash Save the Dog, which was up an incredible 213 places in the breakout games by download charts, according to Data AI. So, yeah, you heard it here first. As far as being able to identify hot new games and where they're heading, their Gaming Pulse story and those Data AI monthly reports, they've got it down to a fine art. And then the rest of it is the, all the usual suspects. The Royal Match, Monopoly Go, of course, Roblox, Candy Crush Saga. You know, all the usual suspects are still doing well, but it's that little breakout chart that always catches me by surprise every month. I love reading that.
That the Hero Clash game, I can't remember if it's X Hero, it's like another version of that, or it's a completely new game. But those games are crazy. They make the question, are they profitable? But I don't know. Yeah, if they make, but they basically have a hyper casual layer, which I think regularly changes. So when you start it, you'll play like a Vampire Survivors, I think is what this one is, but it changes quite a lot. And then you jump into like a deeper sort of RPG style game. And then the hyper casual bit, I think, is optional, if I remember right. So, but yeah, these games are really interesting, well worth checking out, just like how they merge two absolutely distinct art styles and genres together and then trying to scale them. Really fascinating.
Yeah, it's smashing stuff. other things, we'll discuss it a little bit later on, I think. But just Apple again. I've got to talk about Apple. Clarification, or is it, is the name of the game. Basically, they've come forward and they've clarified a few of the rules, and that has been imposed on them by the Digital Markets Act within Europe. A couple of things that I personally found surprising was the fact that they you can't make an app store and put other people's apps in it. They've got to be your apps tied to your account. I think I presumed that, I could make an app store and I could go and get some apps and I could sell them and I could make a little profit off it. Now they've made it very clear that these new alternative app stores that are going to emerge in the coming months on iOS 17.4 within Europe, purely locked to individual companies. But the most interesting thing was it was the direct web downloads. I think people presumed it was going to happen, but they've made it very clear that you can do that. So you don't even have to make an app store. You can download from a web page, provided you jump through all kinds of hoops to make sure that you're not a nefarious bad actor trying to inject code onto their precious iPhone that you paid them for. So yeah, it's an interesting one. Needless to say, it's all presented in the with a big smiling benevolent face of this is all for your good, and we're protecting you from bad actors. But needless to say, every time they open their mouth, the development community just is aghast with what they're doing next. Remains to be seen how the EU will eventually act. My understanding is that things have to be pressed into service and have to happen before the EU will actually step in. So at this early stage, before anybody's really done anything or anything's made it to market, they're not going to act. But there are still a whole shed load of rules involved in getting through Apple's gateway of freedom and getting your apps and app stores onto iOS.
What's interesting is I have no insight into this bit, but it kind of sounds like in the background though, maybe the Apple is in discussions with the European Commission, and that's why you had the Epic change, and now you've got which was kind of explicit that they would speak to Epic, and then there was a change, and now you've got this happening. So yeah, I'm intrigued where that all goes.
We're already starting to see some manoeuvring from a lot of the service companies out there in terms of how they are changing their provision and how they're positioning themselves with regard to the creation of web stores, whether it's off the shelf or customization. We're already seeing some companies out there saying, well, it's more than just having a storefront. It's about how you connect. It's how you build that user journey in, how you get the credibility. There's no point in just sticking it somewhere else where it's going to get lost or people are never going to visit. So I suspect that as the forefront of the mobile games sector, we're going to get an awful lot of people contacting us over the next few months saying, no, we've got the service. We know where this is going. But as always with vendors, you have to take it with a pinch of salt. And I think you're right, Craig. Watching the European Commission is exactly where everybody needs to be looking right now.
Final quick one from me. Craft on creating an India-only game, Garuda Saga, and the pre-registrations open now. I just find it fascinating the whole PUBG and BGMI situation within India. They've had their fingers burnt, and so now they've crafted a specific India title full of cultural references, all the stuff that they got pulled up on, all the stuff that got PUBG and BGMI booted out of India. They have appeased, in theory, they've appeased the entire country by creating a very heavily Indian themed game, which is now open. Whether that will pave the way for other titles, whether they've fully appeased the market in India, but obviously, I just found it interesting the notion that it's so valuable to them that they need to create an entire game that hits all the buttons, all the spots, makes everybody happy, so that they can get back to business.
So the background to this is Krafton got caught. I was going to say they got caught up in that political issues, but it might have been I can't remember now. It might have been to do with addiction, but I think PUBG Mobile was kind of banned, and then they brought it back with, because it's technically also developed by Tencent, and then they brought it back with Battlegrounds Mobile India. And since then, I think they've invested lots of money in the India ecosystem, and now, like you say, with the new game. So I guess they're trying to make sure that history doesn't repeat itself.
It really does go to show that, you know, India is a market in itself. You know, we all know the size, the potential of the region, but they really seem to have seized the initiative in terms of bringing out games which feature far more of their cultural heritage and legacy. So, I say it has to be a positive thing, because it really does start to take away from the almost Western domination of the early years. And so I think we're going to see an awful lot more games coming out of all the regions around the world where mobile was their first experience of gaming, where they're starting to bring through their own types of experience. And who knows, we might see entire new genres coming through from some of the emerging markets, which is going to be interesting.
What's interesting is that the PUBG Mobile and Garena were probably the first titles, someone correct me later if I'm wrong, probably the first titles that actually proved you can monetize in India, because classically you can get hundreds of millions of downloads and you make no money. PUBG Mobile, comparatively to other countries, still didn't make that much, but it did make enough that you get craft on and like wanting to make a go of it and stay in that market, because obviously, well, one hopes that it can kind of continues to grow.
And again, I think a lot of the vendors, service providers out there have really made big inroads into supporting all the different payment mechanisms outside the usual credit card giants and, you know, the PayPals, and really starting to localize down into markets to encourage more players to engage with, by which I mean spend, in mobile games. So, you know, it seems to be bringing through sort of the local markets in all of their beautiful complexity, and just, you know, making it ever more complicated for mobile companies to get out into each of these regions and establish a foothold. So, yeah, it's not a surprise really to see the local companies there first. Thank you, Daniel. Always a pleasure, and some great headlines there. Moving swiftly on, Craig, what's caught your eye this week?
So I've got a few news. I think one of the big ones that broke today was Supercell is ending development on Clash Mini, its take on the auto chess genre. So this was first announced in April 2021, I think, and soft launched later that year. But it seems to have never found that special, I guess, Supercell magic that would launch it into a $1 billion franchise, as really so little of those games that they try and release do. Supercell said the quality bar for the game wasn't met, but it's not completely over, because they're going to bring the Clash Mini experience to Clash Royale, one of their other multi-billion-dollar successful titles. It said it would share the full details on this as soon as possible. I guess while we could applaud, you know, Supercell once again for having the guts to shut down or not fully launch a game that isn't going to meet their expectations, it does seem to put it once again further away from a new global launch. But I guess that's why they're doing all of their restructuring, which we'll kind of go into a bit later. One of the things I wanted to say, though, was interestingly, Clash Mini was announced at the same time as Clash Quest, which has been cancelled, and Clash Heroes, the status of which I'm not actually sure if it's still in development. If I recall, it hasn't been publicly shut down, but like if you go on Twitter, there's no updates. So I don't know what's happening with that. And it kind of seems like they're struggling to expand their IP out into other games again. Obviously, we've got Squad Busters in soft launch, so maybe that'll be one that really reaches global launch. But ultimately, out of the three Clash games that they announced, only one is maybe alive. And then Space Ape also closed Boom Beach Frontlines. So, yeah, Supercell struggling to, one, capitalize on their existing IP, and then two, just launch a whole new game.
I find that, you know, said about it before, their ability to, this is bad news in that they've put an awful lot of time and effort into something which has failed, but then they spin it in this beautiful way of look how brave and forward thinking and progressive and intelligent we are. You know, an idiot would have stumbled on, but we're so clever that we're going to walk away from it. Fascinating, but it works. It works for them. You know, I wouldn't advise anybody else ever trying to do the same, frankly. But yeah, it's for us writing about it and keeping an eye on things, never ending source of entertainment and amusement.
It's just interesting because these are games that any other, well, maybe I don't know about Clash really, but generally they seem like games that any other company would just release, but not Supercell. It's got to be $1 billion or bust. So some respect for that, but you know, it's their business, they're private, whatever. But yeah, anyone else would probably release it.
Yeah, they said they always learn lessons from the projects that get cancelled, which I guess is true to some extent. So they said, you know, they're still further forward for having done it and ended it than if they never did it, which again is a bit of a positive outlook on things. But,
I mean, the last thing to say for me is the other interesting thing is, one, they're keeping some of the Clash Mini stuff, and like, for example, it's a bit different, but with Everdale, they cancelled that, and then I actually gave it to Metacore, which is, I don't know if they acquired it, but it's sort of one of the studios they heavily invested. So it used to be that these games would just sort of seem to disappear into the ether, never to be seen again, whereas now maybe they're actually making more use of that. I don't know if that's an intentional strategy. It's probably just sort of happening. But interesting, again, another thing that's kind of interesting to see. Elsewhere, I'll go through these news very quickly. We've got Indian games publisher Nazara Technologies has pledged $100 million for mergers and acquisitions over the next 24 months. So there is investment going on in games. Like, acquisitions are going to happen. The company said it was looking at opportunities in gaming, esports, and ad tech with a focus on established gaming IPs and studios. It's also looking at companies working in cutting-edge tech like Web3, VR, AR, AI. So all the key buzzwords covered. And then it said, ultimately, I think it just wants to become a more global company. Good luck to them. They're growing. They've been a key player in India for years now. We'll see what they can actually buy with $100 million. Sounds like a lot. But then if you're going to make a major mobile game acquisition, maybe that's not that much. Depends on who they buy, obviously. And then it'll be interesting. I was just saying, it'll be interesting to see if Web3 actually becomes a thing or not again, now that crypto's back on the rise.
Yeah, crypto is doing well, isn't it, now? I mean, yeah, amazing. I was just been watching it.
My Dogecoin is up. I'm the only person that has that, Ian. It's up. Anyway.
Good work. I love Nazara saying, we've got $100 million to spend, and actually inviting Web3 VR and AI folks. They are going to have a queue down the street knocking on their door, I think. It'll be interesting to see where they spend it.
And then elsewhere we've got, speaking of Web3, Animoca Brands has formed a strategic partnership with the King Abdulaziz City for Science and Technology, KCAST for short, to advance the Web3 and gaming ecosystem in Saudi Arabia. So the key details is they're going to establish a physical Web3 hub in Riyadh to incubate startups in the region. That includes setting up physical infrastructure and helping develop local talent. Also includes partnerships with universities and joint research in, again, with these key buzzwords. Joint research in Web3, blockchain, gaming, AI, and the metaverse. So they've one-upped the Zara here.
Ultimately, welcome back to the metaverse.
Yeah. Ultimately, this is a sign of the serious investment from Saudi Arabia in games and wider technology. And that investment is actually rippling out to other countries in the region who, I've been told, are now investing more in games and, I guess, the wider tech space to kind of compete with Saudi Arabia. So, yeah, fascinating to see that region grow.
So I think one of the interesting things is in all of these emerging markets, they're trying to find their own particular niche. You know, if we go back to last week, you had been out in Turkey, who really leapt into the whole hyper-casual market very early and established quite a reputation in and around a really hot, genre in the games world for a good couple of years. And it's really interesting. While I know there's a lot of scepticism about the blockchain, Web3 and the metaverse, let's be honest, these technologies are coming. We don't know how they're going to manifest. We don't know how they're going to be included in sort of mainstream games in the next 5 to 10 years. But it's the regions that are taking the risks, putting the investment in, that are actually going to be well positioned when we know a little bit more. One of the things that worries me about our dear old cynical UK is that we've already decided the metaverse isn't going to be a thing, and that Web3 is, you know, a complete rip-off that has nothing to offer games. And is it going to leave us behind? You know, we're already seeing that AI is being treated with the deepest suspicion. And I'm not saying we need to, you know, be so open-minded our brains fall out, but at the very least, we need to be aware that the changes we're going to see in the next 24 months to 5 years could be seismic. And if we're just going, we just want to make games the way we wanted to make games in the 1990s, it might not go so well.
I think that, yeah, I wouldn't be as harsh to say all that cynicism is very true of the UK. But there is potential in Web3 that it could happen, in games. I think now we'll actually see if that is going to be a thing. Like, the serious companies will start releasing their stuff. The metaverse, I don't know anymore. I used to be quite excited about it briefly, and now I'm like, but the only reason is I think, but then maybe it's just a way of defining online communities which already exist. And then it was just kind of taken on as this buzz term to raise share prices and get investment, which I get it, fair enough. But I think that term started to lose meaning with what some companies were trying to do with it. AI, yeah, that's like the big thing. That's not going anywhere. That's already been a thing, just obviously the new generative tech. There's loads more I could say on it, but that's a whole, as we say, that's a whole podcast in itself.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and the Gartner hype cycle is very well known, and I think we fall into it frequently. The sensible, level-headed approach the games industry took to the fact that Microsoft might not make a physical Xbox was adult and quite balanced, I believe. We certainly didn't lose our collective minds and run around screaming. Anyway, sorry, Craig, I interrupted. What else do you have?
Just one last quick one. So Balancy raised $700,000 to transform game monetization and live ops. So they've got a suite of tools that help scale your live ops and test monetization in real time. They said that they've partnered with over 100 titles, including games from publishers like Lion Studios. Just a quick story, but good to see investment in the game space right now for new companies. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was and just to say, that was a popular story. Whenever people are investing these days, it's good news. People want to read that. I think, you know, any kind of glimmer, the green shoots of M&A returning are always welcome. And that was a good example this week.
Perfect. Thanks, folks. And Aaron, what's been catching your eye? What have you been reading? And more importantly, what have you been writing about this week?
So the Battle of Polytopia has come to Apple Arcade. So that's Mijiwan's 4X strategy game from 2016. Over the years, it's got DLC and stuff, and essentially they've made essentially a deluxe package for Apple Arcade, so subscribers get the base game and all the extra content that's been added, you know, going back 8 years now, all in one package. And obviously,
I don't know how I feel about it. Sounds good, doesn't it? All the DLC, all in one. But when you think about how this it's been drip fed and you know, kept the fans going over years and years and years, for it all just to be like splurged in one kind of drop, I just think, oh, you know, it kind of, it seems to be sort of doing it a bit of a disservice. So yeah, if you're new to it, you're just gonna, yeah, it's a mighty package to kind of get to grips with, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's certainly a good old generous offer. But I just hope that people know where to start with it and get the fun and lifespan out of it that the game deserves, frankly.
My understanding of the culture at Midjiwan is that they're really against normal mobile game monetization business practices.
Right.
They really kind of despise that. So that's why they've gone with this DLC model, so you can play it and not have to pay at all, which technically is how free-to-play works. But anyway, but then you can get DLC, and I think you get access to different factions. So maybe this is a deal that actually works. I hope it does. That actually works for Midjiwan, and it's kind of their philosophy. They're bringing this sort of premium experience to a premium sort of based platform. So, yeah, hopefully in the long term, it works out for them.
It's an interesting one. It is a very, very interesting one when you consider the long tail, the amount of content out there. Maybe, you know, a major content drop is a way to keep people engaged. Maybe it's a way to sort of ensure that the people who have got that level of interest can binge and stay in the universe and, you know, develop that kind of long-term connection with the game. But again, you know, it's such a broad market these days. I think there's room for everything. And for a title that's got such depth and such a strong community around it, maybe this is the way forward. Like releasing the whole of Season 3 of Succession in one go. It's there for those who want it. And for those with self-control who have not yet watched Season 3, no spoilers, please. You can choose when and where you want to dip in.
Yeah, I think as well it should be, it'll give a new experience to people that have played it before as well, because people who would have started back in 2016, there were only 5 tribes at the time. Whereas, yeah, having access to 16 up front with all the DLC, you know, has got to make it quite a different experience to start the game from that point now. So, yeah, I guess it'll bring in new people and maybe bring some people back who played years ago.
Yeah, makes sense. Absolutely makes sense, Adam. Thank you. What's next?
So, Shifter has a projected valuation of up to $2.3 billion now, with, of course, they're known for making Goddess of Victory, Nikki. Yeah, Tencent's their biggest investor already, but they're putting more shares out for application and listing them on the Korean Stock Exchange. And with all that going on, essentially, their valuation has gone up. So it was about $1.5 billion in October, and yeah, it's gone up to $2.3 billion now, which is quite a big increase.
That's a jump. That's a jump. And have they attributed the success to anything? Was it just a really strong user uptake or a particular, monetization mechanism?
I think Goddess of Victory has been doing really well. It made $500 million in its first year. Its anniversary was a couple of months ago. So part of it's that. They've got a new game in the works as well, which is probably catching some investors' eyes.
Stellar Blade, I think, is their new game coming out next month, I think.
Fantastic. Well, it's nice to have some good news out there as well. Moving on, what's next up?
Yeah, so one more story to talk about from this week, which is bringing it back around to Monster Hunter now. So just
always
in time for its... Yeah. Yeah, just in time for its six-month anniversary, the game's finally made it to $150 million in revenue, which is, of course, an impressive milestone to reach. Notably, it did slow down on the way there. Mm-hmm. It got to $100 million in just under 3 months, so obviously it's only made another $50 million in the next three, which...
Only.
I wouldn't mind making $50 million in... 3 months, but
it's no billion dollars, though, is it?
No,
it's not. But you know, You can plow it into user acquisition.
Yeah, that's a tenth of Monopoly Go's UA there. But yeah, obviously it is still an impressive amount to have made. And the team is changing their approach, I think, to try and tackle the slowdown. As I said earlier, there's been quite a lot going on for the anniversary to get people playing more and ultimately spending more. So it sort of has a soft stamina system. So if you take too much damage, you need to buy potions to heal back up and keep playing, or wait to heal back up. So that's quite a clever way of naturally getting people to spend more. And then today, actually, on the 6 month anniversary, they've just launched a battle pass, essentially. Mm-hmm. So, meeting certain requirements in the game will unlock rewards, and then you have the free tier where you get worse rewards. And then it will show you on the other side of the screen, here's what you've unlocked if you also pay to have access to it. So I have a feeling that it's going to at least pick back up again in the short term. But as I say, not that 150 million is anything to scoff at, but yeah, and when it's the same week that Monopoly Go's just done its 2 billion, it doesn't quite sound as good.
So I can see that their revenue's ticked up. It's like probably their best they had their best week for about a month and a half, because revenue was on the decline. So maybe some of those changes are having an impact straight away.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if it didn't, just because there's been so much more going on through March. Whereas like January, February, other than the occasional weekend event, like there wasn't a lot to log in for every day.
Fantastic. That's behind the headlines. And we're moving swiftly on now. The weekend views. We're going to swing back around to you, Daniel.
Yeah. Something I chimed in on earlier on. Yeah, Supercell stuff. I just want to talk a little about Supercell things. It's been quite the couple of weeks. We had the CEO Ilka was talking about his big bold changes at the reveal of the company financials, and he was. It sounded good. It sounded brave. It sounded like he knew exactly what he was talking about. The actual details were a little bit hazy, but things are kind of coming together. We spoke exclusively to the head of Live Ops, Sarah Back, earlier this week, and she made it very clear that Ilka had basically said to her that her job is to grow our live games, and so she's fully on board with that and has a plan. I've just been impressed with the way that they're doing stuff. And the closure of Clash Mini this morning all feels like part of a plan. They're to be admired in that they can never rest on their laurels. And I just find it fascinating the way that they do stuff. The news today is that they have a new behind the scenes internal system of green lighting games, which has come to light in an interview. And they are a process called Spark that basically involves, famously that they put their cells together and the cells work very much autonomously, creating, designing, releasing and driving the destiny of the games that they produce until somebody steps in and says, we don't like it, stop doing that. Up until that moment, they have complete control over what they do. Spark it sounds absolutely terrifying, and I need to drill down further into it. But is this notion that these tests, that they're going to be psychometrically tested, these poor folks, as to check out their compatibility and their ability to work together under pressure. And if they don't pass the test, I guess they don't get to make the game that they want to do. So it's just another level of this amazing sort of Supercell science. I really admire what they do. I can't decide whether working at Supercell would be a dream come true or placing yourself under a very, very large microscope. But whatever it is that they do, it's always very interesting for us to report on, and I admire everything that they work on. They're a strange company. I'm not sure whether anybody else would be ever brave enough to copy what it is that they do, but long may they continue, and we'll continue watching and writing about.
I find it interesting that they so we did Paige did a really good interview with Sarah Back, obviously she said like the head of Live Ops, and then Mobile Gamers got an interview about new games, so it's like the complete one end to the other, and Supercell does seem to be kind of publicizing itself a bit more, getting a bit more out in public. I never say they were super secret, obviously, but I think it's just a sign of how things are changing that they're really opening up again. A couple of things I wanted to point out from the interview that I thought were interesting. One of them was LiveOps accounts for almost 200 people at Supercell, but I think they have over 500 staff now. At least that was the tease they did on LinkedIn. So interesting that LiveOps only accounts for 200 people. especially, you know, when these Clash of Clans is like one of the biggest games in the world, and that has 60 people working on it. Apparently at one point it had 15, so that's how, and they did say I think they doubled or tripled, I can't remember now, the size of that team in a previous announcement. So yeah, interesting. There was a quote, but I didn't quite understand it. It said they said they were also looking at implementing remote cell setups to increase capacity and agility. So I don't know if that means outside of that core cell or at other studios, or even, and they mentioned they do use external companies sometimes to support games.
But my thought is that they are opening up to teams outside the company. If they successfully pass the test and make the cut, then they can come on board and will be financed as they work on their project, which is kind of like, you know, what they've done in the past, but. Yeah, you don't necessarily need to be within the secretive Supercell four walls in order to get some of their love. That they are, you know, they're opening their doors, and if you've got a good idea and a good team ready to implement it, they want to be your best friend. So, yeah, it's an interesting strategy.
And the other interesting thing that she said was, she said that there are moments of top-down decisions such as setting targets or headcount budgets. Now, I thought it was an interesting tidbit because that seems really obvious, but I'm pretty sure the public line before has been it's up to the teams to decide whether they progress. She did say this at the same time. Yeah, she did say this at the same time as noting team empowerment and their significant ownership of projects. But part of me was like, oh, is this part of the new management thing? Or this is how it's always been because they don't release many games. There are clearly certain KPIs and really management decisions that defined like, well, we're not going to release this game, guys. I don't care how many of you want to release this. We can't. And this was just kind of highlighting that. So yeah, that was another interesting quote.
I love the notion that if there's, you know, one of these cells is, you know, is sick of working on this game because it's been going for years, and they want to do something else, and you know, they just roll up one morning, yeah, we've shut it, we don't want to do it anymore. It's like kind of like, yeah, I know you're in autonomous, but start it back up again. You're not that autonomous. You have to do what we say. So yeah, this is why they're so interesting. It's outside looking in. It's fun. It's fun to watch what they do.
Again, it's really interesting to see how studios at that scale are trying to accommodate and find new ways of working, which differentiates original game development and then running a service as a live op, or running live ops for a game as a service, because the two are really different. And I think, you know, that might be something behind some of the layoffs we've seen over the last year, as more and more of the games out there, they already exist. You know, creating new content is not the same as building extra elements into the game. So, you know, it could potentially be because they're producing these so-called forever games that Supercell are now looking for different ways to structure their business where they're not risking losing their best people because of this, you know, really old-fashioned sort of sine wave development cycle, or life cycle, I should say, of game creation. Once it comes out, that's it, mate. We don't need you anymore.
Yeah, it's interesting business, this notion that, you know, in entertainment, everyone's always says, well, nothing lasts forever. You know, you can't flog a franchise to death for 20, 30 years, can you? It's got to die in the end. For this large entity, this large successful entity to be saying, no, we can make this go forever. It's like, okay, go for it, because this is an interesting experiment.
Indeed, indeed. So thank you so much for that. Craig, what have you been taking a deep dive into?
So I want to talk about TikTok. So the news, the excellent. Big news this week, like globally.
Is this Princess Kate again?
No. I guess you could link it to that. You know, there'll be plenty of conspiracy videos on TikTok. But no, so this is the potential TikTok ban in the US. So the major development this week was the US House of Representatives has overwhelmingly passed a bill in a bipartisan vote, which at least for someone afar in a different country looking at it seems quite rare these days. And the bill means that TikTok could be banned in the US. It still needs to go through the Senate, where it may not pass. But were it to be passed, President Joe Biden has said he would sign it into law. And basically what it is that ByteDance has to sell TikTok within 6 months, or like at least the US arm of it, mm-hmm. or just be banned in the US. Crazy to think that would happen. It basically, I believe, centers on fears that the data of US people is being sent to China. TikTok says no, but then there was a story earlier this year about a journalist that was targeted. Mm-hmm. So maybe it does. And then that data could be accessed by Chinese government agencies, and or that the app could be used by China to influence public opinion in the US. The BBC reported that Mike Gallagher, a Wisconsin Republican who co-authored the bill, said the US could not take the risk of having a dominant news platform in America controlled or owned by a company that is beholden to the Chinese Communist Party, end quote. TikTok obviously isn't happy about this. In fact, it sent notifications to all its US users calling on them to contact their local representatives and argue against the bill. So I think they were besieged by phone calls about this. And I think TikTok was saying it basically infringes on free speech, which is obviously part of the Constitution there. There's so much to this story, it's ridiculous. So interestingly as well, former President Donald Trump, who could potentially be president again after the next election, is now saying that TikTok shouldn't be banned, having really kickstarted the whole reason that it should get banned originally. And reports have claimed that he said this after he met a Republican donor who is a minority ByteDance shareholder. And after that meeting, he's then announced he's against the bill. And I guess that could have ramifications now for it getting passed in the Senate. Some other background to this. So obviously there are political tensions that saw TikTok and various Chinese apps banned in India. And in China itself, we've seen China set up rules for foreign companies. So they look to publish games like in the country. So you're required to set up a local business and have local partners to do so. But China's obviously, well, I don't know what they've said about this now, but previously they've said they're against a TikTok sale. Sorry for going all over the place. There are so many details and backgrounds. Whatever, the story is just crazy. But I thought it was interesting to just say like other context that's happened. Like China has previously stealth banned games in South Korea over US and South Korea tensions for a missile defense system. I believe finally, after a few years, South Korea published in China again. So basically what I'm trying to get at is there's all these political tensions that then have wider ramifications, and it's happening kind of across the globe, and it's kind of maybe fracturing the internet a bit. And really in future, and obviously you've got regulations like in the EU and that about other things that we've discussed on this podcast. So you might a real fracture of the internet that you might start seeing, or you can't access certain things here, there, in certain regions that you can in others, which I thought was fascinating. But this is a games podcast. So what does it all mean for games? So TikTok is one of the most popular social media apps out there, obviously. It has 150 million users in the US alone. It's become a key channel for user acquisition and marketing campaigns for apps and games. So losing it means you lose a valuable channel to reach wide audience, but also younger audiences. Ultimately, I think this is going to benefit Facebook and other US companies, which maybe is also part of the strategy. And then money will shift to other networks. But I think in the near term, I think publishers just lose this amazing channel to market their games to, or for users themselves to share their own generated content about those games or about the kind of the gaming ecosystem as a whole. That's just gone over, well, potentially overnight. If a sale doesn't go through, it seems quite difficult to do. Yeah, we'll see how this unfolds, but major news.
I was just going to say, it's fascinating to think it hangs on a knife edge as regards whether banning TikTok in America, whether it's a vote winner or a vote loser. I just think, you know, I can imagine people going, yes, kick out this Chinese spyware, well done. And then somebody just picking up their phone and going, wait a second, why doesn't my TikTok work anymore? You know, heads will roll for whoever took my TikTok away. Yeah, it's a nightmare. I watch with interest as to what's going to happen. But yeah, I do believe that it's a dangerous precedent, and there are global ramifications as regards what could happen next. You know, is a social media app, you know, are you able to rule the world via a lovely social media app? You know, yeah, who knows? Maybe one day, but yeah, I want to see which side of the fence the various powers that be in America come down as regards TikTok, yay or TikTok nay. We'll see.
It also, just quickly, that content creators, you know, make a living off of platforms like TikTok, and then that disappears overnight, so people actually lose a lot of. Individuals lose a lot of money, as well as publishers finding it more difficult to reach users potentially.
I'd be quite interested to see what comes up to replace it if it does go. Like, it sounds bad now you've said about the content creators, but I'm quite excited at the idea of it going down. as the
excited
resident young person, just everyone's on it all the time. It's like, at least rid of it.
But what I love about that is, you go, that as the resident young person, people are on this app far too much.
My demographic spend far too much time on that.
Yeah.
So I'd quite like to see it go down, and, you know, everyone could spend more time playing mobile games. You know?
Oh, man.
But, so, I mean, thanks, Anne. First of all, I have never felt more like a dinosaur than I have just now. For your information, I have a surprisingly popular TikTok channel in which I look confused. And yeah, it's like stab at the screen wondering how the hell to make this thing work. I mean, let's be honest, it's social media is social media, regardless of where it's owned. Lest we not forget that we had our own moment of peril with social media back over the Brexit vote when the whole Cambridge Analytica scandal broke. And they were owned by a good old-fashioned capitalist company based in the USA, namely our friends at Facebook. We won't even dignify the podcast by mentioning the hell that Twitter/X has become, and who the heck knows what Threads is going to go and do. It seems to be something that is being conflated along nationalist lines, shall we say. There's always been questions about anything coming out of China in terms of the government's control over it, down to the actual equipment used for 5G networks, with Huawei and so many other companies being actively banned by Western governments. Is TikTok malevolent? I'm not entirely sure. It's a really good place for promulgating conspiracy theories and dance videos. I've found some new music artists on there and quite a lot of games. So, yeah, this is a strange one. It's as you say, Craig, it has very, very quickly become one of the go-to places for promoting games and user acquisition and marketing, because it is so damn easy to make things. And once you've done a couple of searches for particular topics, it does start showing up in your For You page. I like it. I get the concerns, but it's one of these ones where I doubt we're going to see the end of this particularly quickly. you know, there are all sorts of international laws. And let's be honest, even if you ban it tomorrow, young people in America are not going to go back to Facebook in droves. You know, that's the domain of dinosaurs like myself, Aaron. But it is going to be one to watch, as we say. So moving swiftly on towards the end of this episode, Aaron, have you managed to drill down into any headlines? What have you been looking at this week, you whippersnapper?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, feel free to keep the young person compliments coming.
if I can remember, I will.
I can always remind you, don't I? Anyway, so yeah, I covered recently that Capcom is investing in its people, meaning that it's giving all employees a pay rise, which is actually just, wow, it's nice to have a really nice story in the midst of all the layoffs and cutbacks that have been going on in the industry. Yeah, it's just really refreshing to see a games company that's in a position to, yeah, give everyone a pay rise. So the average is expected to be about 5%. People's wages are going to be going up. And they've been going up gradually for a couple of years now. So that'll mean, I believe, at the end of this year, the average like base salary will have gone up by 30% since 2022, which is pretty good.
That is.
Yeah. So that equated to about $450 extra pay a month for like new graduate hires, which is also pretty good, pretty nice of them. And they basically said that, yeah, they want to invest back in the people that make their company a success. And yeah, I'd say it's just a nice story, really.
Always like Capcom. Brilliant. Well done, Capcom. Let's hope more folks reward the guys that are working hard for them. But yes, everyone go get a job at Capcom. They're brilliant.
This podcast is brought to you by
other employers are available. That joke works if you're in the UK and you listen to or watch anything on the BBC, folks. If you're not, don't worry. It was a little niche. But it is. It's always nice to end on a positive story. It's always nice to hear about a studio that's doing its very best to treat its employees well. And even in the sort of the current climate of layoffs and uncertainty, that there are some studios that are focused on keeping their team, rewarding their team. And when the studio does well, the team does well too. So that's great. Thank you very much indeed, Aaron. Now, that brings us very nearly to an end of this week's. And just as we were hitting the hour, my God, the efficiency we're bringing to these productions is incredible. Before we go, I have an apology. Yes, Correction Corner exists in the PG.biz podcast. Last week, I was speaking very knowledgeably about the last news story of the day, which was InnoApps, and saying very confidently they were a Danish company. I had just finished writing an article. InnoGames, you're quite right. See, Correction Corner now has a Correction Corner. This could go fractal. I wasn't talking about InnoGames, I was talking about our friends at Tactile, who are headquartered in Copenhagen. So my apologies to both InnoGames and Tactile and InnoApps if they want one too. So sorry about that, chaps. I was overexcited and highly caffeinated. Thanks for your patience, folks. Thanks for tuning in. We really appreciate your time, your attention. We know there are many other podcasts out there, so thank you for joining us. As always, if you leave a like and subscribe, it means that we can do more. It really helps get the podcast out there and in front of other people. As always, if you want to talk to us, we would love to hear from you. The email address is podcast@pocketgamer.biz, or you can find us on Twitter /X@PGBiz. And we would love to hear from you. It only remains for me to say thanks, as always, to Craig, to Daniel, and to Aaron. Hopefully we'll get some of the other team members joining us in future episodes. Our fingers are crossed. But for now, that's it. Thanks again, and we'll see you at the next episode.